We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The show that takes you home. The Homestretch with Sterling Holmes on ESPN Kansas City. 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
Welcome to Homestretch, ESPN Kansas City, live in studio on this beautiful Friday afternoon. We're joined by David Leske from Inside the Crown. In about 15 minutes talking some Royals, as guess what? Kyle, you know what's up. We're back, baby. Baseball's back.
Baseball's back. There is baseball being played today.
There is baseball being played. Yeah, it doesn't matter. No, the lineup is not what's going to be come opening day. At least I sure hope not, or else that's an absolute and utter disaster. If Garrett Hampson's batting leadoff, we have issues.
And playing short.
And playing short. Good call. If Sandy Leone is a starting catcher, things have gone sideways. But you got Gentry, Waters, Lofton, Massey, Velasquez, Pasquantino all in the lineup today. Brousseau, obviously the guy who, Tampa Bay legend, right? Wasn't that with Tampa Bay when he hit that?
Mike Brousseau off of Chapman?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a hit today. Waters has a bomb, and Massey has a triple. The Royals are going to be the best team of all time. Has to, with that happening.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Even though they are losing 3-2. We will talk more about this with David Leske, and again, about 10 to 12 minutes. Do want to bring up a NFL-related tidbit here as the NFL salary cap rises to $30.6 million to a record $255.4 million per team. This is massive, man. This is a big deal for Kansas City. Now, I will obviously point out this is good for every team. Okay, so while you might originally think, hey, for Kansas City, this is phenomenal. Maybe they can keep some more of these guys. This also means that other teams have more money to throw around as well. So you might see some players, well, get larger contracts than originally thought. So it's a double-edged sword here. But again, I think for the most part, you have to at least be enthused for KC. Maybe you don't have to extend Justin Reed anymore. You can let him play on his current contract, right? Maybe that's something that happens. Maybe you don't have to readjust MVS's contract. Maybe it is a full-on cut instead of a restructure. Just certain of those middle contracts, right, that we all thought we're going to have some workarounds put in them. Maybe now the Chiefs will not have to. But again, every team now has more money to throw around as well. This is a 13.6% increase over last year's cap. Last year's $224.8 million. Again, $30.6 million more per team than last year. So most of the projections had the cap coming in around $240 million to $245 million. This is crazy. Like, this is, I don't want to say unprecedented because I don't want to go back and speak wrongly if a percent increase has happened like this before, but this is crazy. Like, this is nuts. When you think it's going to be 240 to 245 and then it comes in at 255.4, again, you're looking at a situation where I think the majority of the teams in front offices right now have to be pretty pretty thrilled. Because a lot of these teams, by the way, they run their projections off of the lower number, right? So they're like, oh, we got to run off of 240 just in case. Now all of a sudden you finally get 15 mil more to work with? Yeah.
That sounds like a L'Jarius Sneed extension.
One can hope. But again, like when it comes down to Chris Jones, and while again that's the thought process, at least initially. Well, now a team that was going to pay Chris Jones $30 million might go, you know what, we'll pay him $33, $34. Who cares? We got extra money to work with. A team that was going to pay Legarius $17 per season, they're like, what's 20 versus 21 if that means we get him versus we don't get to get him? So that's what it's going to come down to. Again, the Chiefs are still going to have some decisions to make, but this should alleviate some of the concerns that were there.
100%. And I think teams now... This can only be a good thing. There are no negatives here. I mean, think about, you know, some of the more minor pieces, especially on the Chiefs' defense, along that defensive line. They're definitely going to be in the market for probably some veteran D-line help.
Oh, they have one guy, as we've mentioned, Neil Farrell under contract.
And that's it. And now think about Drew Tranquil, Willie Gay. You know, some stuff can now... You've got a little extra cushion, basically.
Well, and even a guy like Mecole Hardman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, who might get a smaller deal, but... Maybe there's room now to bring him back. And now, I don't think it would happen. But now is Tommy Townsend for sure gone? Because if you have the money to keep a punter because you have more money than you thought you had, if it is only going to be $3.5 million per season instead of one, maybe this is an actual competition and not just a for sure thing that Tommy's done. Again, I'm still leading towards Tommy Townsend's play his last snap in Kansas City, which is last punt being a recovery by Kansas City in the Super Bowl, right? That's a good way to go out as a punter. But... maybe it makes that decision more intriguing now. Three teams, 49ers, Packers, and Seahawks, they all probably thought that they were going to be over the cap. And then all of a sudden, this morning, they go, oh, yeah, we're under the cap, baby. So I think no team is happier than the 49ers, Packers, and Seahawks, at least management-wise. Part of the reason for the massive jump, according to ESPN, is that the league has now paid back all the player benefits that were deferred in 2020 as part of the agreement between the players and the league to keep the league running during the COVID-19 pandemic. So that's a big reason why.
So it wasn't all Taylor Swift.
Not all Taylor Swift. Sorry to the Swifties. Don't come at us. It had a medical reason, basically, because of COVID-19. But, you know, yell at Kyle, not me. Swifties, don't come to me. Cap growth is directly tied into the league's revenue growth, but it was limited in 2022 and 2023 because of the repayment of those benefits. Those repayment benefits were subtracted from the final calculations. So, with all the benefits repaid... 2024 cap number more closely reflects the increase in revenue. They did say, the NFL, why the cap rose so sharply as well is because of an extraordinary increase in media revenue. Since the league signed new deals with its broadcast partners in 2021, there had been a belief that 2024 and 25 were the first years in which the new TV revenue would really have a noticeable impact on the league. So there you go. And I guess that also goes on to, does that mean the Peacock situation? Amazon sounds like they're going to be getting a game for the playoffs, right? That's what at least it looked like. Maybe I'm wrong. I saw that this morning. I apologize. I didn't actually do a deeper dive into that. I was going to talk more baseball in this, but then I just thought of that. How much do those play a factor in what the salary cap number is going to be going forward? But again, you might not see the increase for a couple years. Again, 2021 was the new deal. You're seeing it now in 2024. But part of that, again, goes back to having the COVID benefit numbers that had to be repaid.
That Amazon thing you're talking about, Joe Pompliano,
yeah.
Amazon is paying $150 million for an exclusive streaming-only NFL playoff game next year. Peacock paid them $110.
You'll never hear me like this. You'll never hear me like this.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
I feel for... most people have Amazon Prime, and they're like, why don't you? Well, I know it's silly, but for me, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't shop online that much. I'm not going to pay money to this massive conglomerate when I would prefer to shop local. That's not me trying to be like better than thou. That's just a philosophy. And I hate the fact that a lot of older people who might not have the ability, like my grandparents, like my grandpa would love to watch the games, but he doesn't know how to download Amazon or these apps, and I get it. Like, he lives in Southern Indiana. I can't get there and set it up for him when I'm here. Like, there are just certain things that I don't know if the NFL really... And again, I'm sure it's a cost analysis. I don't want to say they don't understand, because I bet they do understand. They just think that the value and the money that they receive makes up for it. But a lot of older people who might not be as technically savvy, some people who don't have the smart TVs, right? Not everyone has a smart... The majority of folks do. I'm not talking about the 95%. I'm talking about the 5% that all of a sudden now don't have the ability to watch not a Week 3 game, not a preseason game, not the Broncos versus Panthers, but a playoff game, right? That, to me, is a... it's sad. That's what it comes down to, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. And I'm one of those lucky ones. My grandma lives here locally. I did actually set up the Peacock thing for her. She's got a smart TV. And, yeah, like you just mentioned, some people just don't... are not that lucky, you know? So I understand the frustration, but the NFL will make their move based on money. I think we all know that.
Yes. The NFL saw a salary rise increase of roughly $10 million to $12 million per year every year from 2013 to 2020. The cap dropped by nearly $17 million in 2021. Guess what the salary cap was in 2021?
$217. $182.5 million.
$70 million more. 73 more now.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Because of the pandemic, obviously.
Yeah.
But it went from 198 to 182.5, then 208.2,
okay, so there was the drop.
224.8, and then this year, 255.4.
Man alive.
So normally you get 10 to 12 million per year is the increase. Mm-hmm. That's why I think a lot of folks thought the number was going to come in the 240s, because they expected the increase, obviously, with the benefits being paid back from 224.8 to 245-ish. That's still 17. That's still a good... or 20 million. It's still a pretty big increase, but the 30... it says, great for GMs.
Yeah. This from Peter Schrager.
And players, by the way.
This from Peter Schrager, Stu. Tell me, can you guess what the salary cap was in 94?
I'll say 100 million.
34.
Wow.
That is ridiculous.
30 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago. That's what the cap increased basically this one year.
It was an Oakland A's payroll.
Man.
Soon to be Vegas. We'll see.
Tell you what, if you're an athlete now, you are living in the best time to be an athlete. But again, come check back in 10 to 20 years from now, 30 years from now, maybe then would be the better time to have been an athlete. You can always look forward, you can always look back and say, hey, what could have been for those guys? But at some point, you got to live in the now. Take a break. We will live in the now, talking Royals baseball with David Leske, Homestretch, ESPN Kansas City.
We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals. If you want to be
having a great time.
Be, welcome back to the home stretch. Joined now by David Leske. Leske, how are you?
You know, can't complain. There's baseball in my ears, and it's a nice day out. I get to talk to you. Everything is coming up, Leske.
Oh, my gosh. Two Duffys have already pitched in the game. One Danny and for the Rangers, and another Duffy for Kansas City. Wow, look at that.
And there's a Duffy on the field for the Rangers, too.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes things change, but sometimes they stay the same.
Yep,
all right, Leske.
Duffy Central.
Get ready for me to be insufferable, because Drew Waters is that dude as he hits a home run in this game, and I am all on board in Drew Waters being the starting center fielder.
He also struck out.
Yeah, but that that's fine. If you're hitting 1-for-2 with a home run and a strikeout, I'll take that all day, Leske. And that's gonna keep up for all 162 regular season games.
If he gets 600 plate appearances and hits 300 homers with 300 strikeouts, I'm gonna call it a good year.
And you know what? And somehow they'll have a Barry Bonds stat where his OPS still is less than his.
Okay. Let me think this through. So he gets up 600 times, four bases obviously every time, 2,000. No, it would be higher than Barry Bonds. But what's wild, like legitimately, I you have to try to do some math here. If he were to go 100 for 600 with 100 home runs, it'd be a terrible batting average, but it'd still be a decent year. That would be closer. I need to do the math, but I wonder if Barry Bonds is higher than that. That's crazy. That's just wild. Yeah.
All right. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start stadium? You want to start Quick Trip Patch? You want to start spring training? You want to start Eric Hosmer? We got a lot to talk about.
I want to go wherever you want to go.
All right.
You lead the way.
Let's start with Hosmer retiring, because I find it fun. I find it reminiscent, just looking back on what he did in Kansas City. And also, I find it interesting that 29 other teams are just ripping on the guy. And I guess I kind of understand, because ever since he left Kansas City, you know, 8 years ago or 7 years ago now, he had a negative WAR while amassing $144 million. It's just funny how one team views him in this immaculate light, while 29 other teams are like, wow, I can't believe we're having this much of a parade for this guy.
Well, I mean, he wasn't an integral part of a World Series champion for 29 other teams. It was only for the one. And, you know, his career took a bit of a turn. Didn't go very well for him in San Diego or Chicago, or that like 10-minute period where I think he was almost traded to the Nationals, and then in Boston, things did not go as I think planned for anybody. I mean, people panned the Padres for giving him that deal back when they did, and rightfully so. He didn't deserve that contract, but that's fine. The Royals, honestly, if they didn't give it to him, the Royals were going to give him something close. So. I wonder a little bit sometimes what would have happened. He was clearly comfortable here. I don't think he had a problem being the guy necessarily. And he wasn't in San Diego for long because they ended up signing Machado and Tatis came up and all that. But I wonder how different things would have been. Would he have continued to be a pretty good hitter? Probably continue to be an overrated defender. I don't know. And then I also think about, let's say the Royals did give him that deal. Let's call it the exact deal. It doesn't matter, really. It would have been their first $100 million contract before Bobby Witt Jr. Would the last few years have been as dark for Kansas City? Because they would have had this massive contract on the books that they probably would have tried to spend toward winning a little bit more, maybe, over the years. So it's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it. You don't know the answer to it because it's all hypothetical. But, again, the guy is top 15 offensively in Royals history in, like, 13 categories or something like that. He was the number four, I think he hit fourth, in a World Series champion. You know, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, when he goes to bed at night, I don't think he's going to bed thinking, oh, man, I wish I would have played better on that. I mean, he probably does think about that sometimes, but he probably goes to bed staring at his World Series ring.
And with $144 million, it doesn't suck.
I don't know Hosmer well at all. I mean, I've talked to him a few times, but I would imagine he probably has some regrets, but I also don't think he has any problems falling asleep. Yeah. At least not because of his career.
How do you view him just in Royals totality here, right? He was a guy who had, the Royals have had a lot of dudes with a lot of hype, but he was up there with the Gordon hype and George Brett hype and Bo Jackson hype. Like, he was in the pantheon of potential. And he was, again, really good. And when you look back, I think when you win a World Series and you are that big of a part of that, it can never be labeled a disappointment. But is there ever a part of you that almost realizes that he was kind of, for a while at least, a trend of guys who had a lot of potential and never seemed to hit his ceiling?
Well, I mean, you look up and down the Royals organization historically, how many guys have come up and not been as good as they should have been? Well, we thought they should have been, I guess we should say.
I was going to say, to kind of phrase this a little better for you, is that a organizational thing, or is that almost fans in general, where we always expect a top prospect, no matter the organization, to all of a sudden be Bryce Harper, to be Mike Trout, to be Ronald Acuna Jr., when in reality, that's way more rare than even we think?
I mean, it's an organizational thing, because now, to get to that level, it's not going to happen as often as you want it to, but I mean, that's not the Royals have historically, well, in the last 25 years, I might be wrong on on a number because 25 years ago in my head is like 1992, and that's not accurate. But they don't get as much out of players as they should. I mean, I'm not saying Eric Hosmer should have been trying to think off the top of my I'm blanking on any, you know, Fred McGriff, let's say. Like that,
Freddie Freeman.
Freddie Freeman, sure. Let's use a current player, Freddie Freeman. I'm not saying he should have been. We shouldn't be disappointed that he wasn't Freddie Freeman, but like he could have been Tino Martinez, and I don't think he was. You know,
sure.
And it's Royals players have typically fallen pretty far from where I think they were expected to be. You know, Mike Moustakas took what, 5 years before he was a productive big league hitter. Hosmer was off and on for a few years and then kind of settled in for a few years. Alex Gordon took a long time. Billy Butler, great Royals hitter, Billy Butler. Not as good as he could have been. I mean, it's a long line, but it doesn't take away from what Eric Hosmer did. And in my opinion, my hot take is you can put the whole 2015 roster in the Royals Hall of Fame. I don't care. I'm not going to argue with that at all.
Sure.
I obviously it's not going to happen, so it's easy for me to say that. But there isn't a single player on that roster who I'd look at and argue too much with.
Yeah, Ryan Madsen, I think, really deserved. Or was that 14?
No, he was 15.
Yeah, Ryan Madsen.
You want to put Ryan Madsen in the Royals Hall of Fame? I don't care. Do it. He pitched important innings. Good. Great. Because here's the thing, in my opinion. Team Hall of Fames are obviously different than League Hall of Fames.
Yeah.
And or Sport Hall of Fames, I guess, because it's not an MLB Hall of Fame. It's a Baseball Hall of Fame. The Team Hall of Fame tells the story of the team. And you can't tell the story of the Royals franchise without Eric Hosmer. You can't. Because he was a middle-of-the-order, huge prospect, all that, on a World Series champion. Mm. You cannot tell the team story without him. So he needs to be a Royals Hall of Famer. And look, the numbers are there, too. It's not like he's 87th in home runs and 144th in RBIs. Like, no, he's top 15. And it was the most engaging 3 years in social media era of Royals history.
Yeah.
And he was the forefront of that. I mean, the career didn't pan out the way that everybody expected it to when he came up in 2011. But he had a good career. Like, this is not a situation where you're looking at a complete bust. He didn't live up to the hype, but he had a great career.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you as far as him being a Royals Hall of Famer. He was the, you know, for me, it's him, Lorenzo, and Salvador. Like, if you could only pick three, I think those three.
You got to put Alex Gordon in there.
Fine, you're correct. Alex Gordon, so four. Zach Greinke, I think, just in totality, obviously, just for what he did. He was in that era, that three-year stretch, but just Greinke's obviously in there. And then I guess Moose would probably be the fifth, right? And then you'd go Eske, maybe sixth, before you start, if you want to start getting into the bullpen debate as well. I think that's obviously one to be had.
Look, Danny Duffy, Yordan Ventura. Like, these guys that we can talk. I mean, I could talk 2014, 2015 Royals forever. It's hard for me personally to separate emotion from logic with that team. Mm-hmm. And like I said, if you want to put Gerard Dyson in the Royals Hall of Fame, I'm in. You want to put Christian Colon in there? Done. Let's do it. Paulo Orlando? Heck yes.
Excuse me, I think you mean Paulo Tripolo.
I do. You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize, Hud. Oh, boy, that just made me think of when he hit the green walk-off.
Yeah, you like that one?
Yeah, that was, boy, I love me some HUD. I used to do a really good HUDler impression. I don't think it's good anymore.
Try it. Come on, it's spring training. It's the same thing. It's spring training for your HUD.
Okay, I got to get into it. It's funny, I actually listen. Do you ever listen to people who do impressions for a living?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, it is amazing. And they always talk about, like, there's always a phrase that they have to use to get into the impression. And mine for Hudler is, I love baseball. Because he says it, he's like, I love baseball, it's great. Baseball is that's a big league pearl. And it's the only way I can get into it. It needs some work.
Dude, strong, big fan.
You know what you're going to do.
Oh, man. I am a massive fan. I need to work on my huddler with you. We whenever we're playing some poker or something soon, we'll
for sure.
We'll do that.
I got that in my Denny impression that one's good.
It works. That one's electric. That one I've heard a time or two, and that one's legitimately electric. Like you get chills when you get into that.
When I get going, it's pretty good. I haven't even tried it yet this spring, so I'm not going to give it to you yet.
Yeah, that's still you're on the IL right now. That one's got to get stretched out.
I got to stretch for that one.
Got to get stretched out.
It's just raspy enough that it really does take a little more out of your voice.
Actually, in a serious conversation, though, with the lack of, since we were talking about guys who had very high potential who he didn't quite live up to, and you think it's more of an organizational thing, that's why I thought Bobby Witt Jr. was such a big step for Kansas City. Not just the fact that he was great, but the fact that he was so great so early on, and especially getting rewarded for what he did. It feels different with Bobby Witt Jr. than all of the previous guys who, quite frankly, all had the exact same amount of hype as Bobby Witt, right? Let's be real now. Wouldn't you say Gordon had the same amount? Wouldn't you say that Hosmer had the same amount, and they had good careers? And again, I'm not saying Bobby Witt Jr. could not just fall off. I'm sure it is possible, but it seems very, very unlikely. We've already seen more from Bobby Witt Jr. as far as the ceiling, the ability to carry a team on his back, that I think we saw from the previous guys, and that to me again is a step in the right direction. It feels new, it feels fresh.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Witt Jr.'s season last year was the best in Kansas City since Lorenzo Cain in 2015, and before that, a Beltran year, maybe.
Yeah,
like that's, and you feel like it wasn't even the full potential, you know, because he started off so slow. I mean, it was late May. People were talking about he got moved down in the lineup to sixth or seventh. That's 2 months into the season. He got moved down because he was struggling. So. To see him turn things around and have that kind of overall year. I mean, I remember last season looking at the numbers and I'm going, oh, he's got the third best wins above replacement in baseball since June 1st. And then at some point it was like, oh, he's got the fifth best wins above replacement in baseball. Not since June 1st, just overall. And that's with 2 months of being kind of bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the big thing, Bobby Witt Jr. in 2024 and obviously beyond, the important thing here is full season. Got to do it for 6 months. And there's going to be slumps. I'm not saying that he has to go 6 months without a single 0-for-4 or whatever, but he can't have 7-8 weeks where the conversation is, like, there was a point, the conversation was, should he be sent to AAA? And the answer was always no, let's be real. I don't think that there was ever a point that he should have been sent to AAA, other than if you want to say, hey, the guy is struggling and we can get back that year of service time, which it's another argument, but doesn't matter anymore because of the contract. But conversation wouldn't happen after last season, but he can't have those stretches as a nearly $300 million man, even though he'll never actually get to that point in the contract probably, but it just can't happen. So that's the big next step for him. He's got to extend it into the cold months. Have to start pretty well too. It was to see him do that and do something that so many guys have struggled to do. And eventually, like Alex Gordon, he found it eventually, and he had some legitimately great seasons. Billy Butler, I mean, he got sent down too. Remember in 2008, he got sent down. He had some really great offensive seasons, and that's all that matters for Butler because his value was bad. Hosmer had a couple great seasons. Moustakas had a couple really good seasons. You know, they ended up having the seasons that you maybe expected, but it just wasn't as much as you expected in total. And that's what, for Bobby Witt, it's about doing that. It's about getting to the total success and not, you know, not bits and pieces here and there.
David Lesky is our guest. Small move that was made, and he's in the lineup today. Sandy Leone. This was interesting to me because it was originally reported as a minor league deal.
No, you're wrong on the catcher. Leone was already signed. Who? It was Austin Nola. Austin Nola,
I apologize. Yeah. Austin Nola, that was originally a minor league deal. That was...
didn't mean to just call it, hey, you're wrong. I wanted to stop.
You're completely correct. I saw Sandy Leone in the lineup. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was the guy. No, Austin Nola, he was with the Padres for a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. Why? Because it looks like it's a major league deal from the correction, and that I don't understand unless that means Freddie Fermin or just a trade in general's in the works. I'm just confused here.
No, so deal came through last night, yesterday evening maybe. I saw it, and I was just kind of whatever. It didn't mean much to me. And then I actually got a text from somebody who, in the know, I'll say that, I'll leave it at that, who was like, hey, major league deal just means 40-man deal. He wanted a 40-man. He's on the 40-man roster. And then JJ talked this morning, I guess, and Rogers reported on that he said, look, he has an option. This is a depth deal. We wanted a third catcher on the 40-man. We expect Freddie Fermin to be the backup, all that good stuff. So it's 100%, from what I can tell, depth. They didn't have a third catcher on the 40-man. They were able to move Chris Bubich to the 60-day IL because spring training had started, so they could sign somebody else to the 40-man. In my opinion, they didn't want to get into a situation like they did last year, where, I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad about Logan Porter or Tyler Cropley or whoever. I think they wanted guys who they trust behind the plate, and I don't think they truly trusted those two, but they didn't really have much of a choice because just injury upon injury upon injury as the season went on. And so I think they wanted legitimate big league catching depth. And my opinion, and this is not from any source, my opinion is had Austin Nola been available earlier in the offseason, Sandy Leone probably wouldn't have gotten a minor league deal. Mm. And I would not be surprised now, again, conjecture, full conjecture, just to put that out there, I would not be terribly surprised if you see a lot of Sandy Leone early in camp because they are like, hey, guy, rest of baseball, come see him, sign him away from us because we have him now and we don't want to keep him from everybody because we actually wanted Austin Nola. and Nola wasn't available because he was with the Brewers and they let him go when they signed Gary Sanchez to, I think, like a $7 million deal or something. No, that got nixed because of a physical thing, but whatever it was, they signed Gary Sanchez and let Austin Nola go. So that's the move. I think when you put it in that context, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Sure.
Catching is good. Catchers are tough to come by, and Nola is not without interest. He's a good defender, but he also, I mean, he could hit a couple years ago. You remember he got traded in, I think it was the 2020 season. So obviously small sample because everything was a small sample, but he hit well in 2019, hit well in 2020, and then kind of fell off. And then last year had some concussion issues.
He was really bad last year, but 2021 was pretty solid. 2021. Yeah, 2021, he slashed OPS of 716, sure. OPS plus of 101, so league average with plus defense as a catcher. Again, 194 plate appearances, but still, as a backup catcher, you take that every single time.
Yeah, I mean, look, if the Royals brought back Cam Gallagher and said he's your backup catcher, I don't think you're upset. Look at his offensive numbers last year. The catching depth is about somebody you actually trust to lace up behind the plate because it's a tough job, and that's the Austin Nola deal. I guess it's possible that he outplays Freddie Fermin in spring training. I don't see it because, from my understanding, the Royals and Mac Petrero will love Freddie Fermin.
Yeah,
and Salvi's not going anywhere unless they say he's no longer a catcher, I don't see happening right now. Maybe eventually, but he's not going anywhere right now, so this is purely to get a third catcher on the 40-man.
Yeah. David Leske is our guest right here. Michael Massey is obviously playing for his starting job this spring training. He has a triple off of, actually, of all people, Danny Duffy in this game, lefty versus lefty. How important is it that Michael Massey continues to rake all spring training, obviously with Adam Frazier, the veteran, waiting in the wings? Again, it was a signing where you and I have talked about it before. It does seem a little bit redundant, but also it puts pressure on a young guy to say, hey, you have to produce now. There's no more sitting and waiting. It's time. Put up or shut up. What does this mean for Michael Massey in his spring training?
So before the 2023 season, the Royals put together a little nice little thing where I was invited out with a few other people, got to sit and chat with JJ Piccolo and Mac Potrero, and it was really, really cool experience. And one of the things that JJ said that caught my attention was that 2023 was going to be the year where guys could let them know if they could be counted on beyond 2023. And the implication, and then he asked a couple questions and kind of got, you know, GM speak a little bit, but the implication was very clearly, if these guys don't show themselves to be a core piece, they will either no longer be on the team or there will be competition for them in 2024 and beyond. Mm. And I think that I don't like Adam Frazier as a player. I just don't think he's good enough. So I don't love the choice they made, but I don't have any problem with them bringing in that sort of depth and that competition for a Michael Massey, because he didn't have a good year. He had flashes, brutal April, didn't walk at all until like the 29th. And even that, I feel like it was on a pitch clock violation, I think actually. It definitely was on a pitch clock violation. The pitch was actually thrown and it was a ball. So it was really disappointing because I'm sure he was like, can you just call it a ball? So I actually walked on a called ball four, but whatever. It was still a walk. And he was better from that point forward. His strikeout rate cut down a lot. He showed some power, especially as the season progressed. But it wasn't a good year. And so, yeah, I think Adam Frazier was brought in as I don't know if it's purely competition or as competition slash depth, but whatever the reason, that means Michael Massey's got to have a big spring. And he had a big spring last year. I don't know if you remember, there was a Baseball America article talking about guys who their spring was poising them for big years. And Massey was on that list. I was on that train too. I'm a big Michael Massey fan. I think that I just love the way he goes about his work. I think he's a good defender at second base. I like his swing. I'm a big fan. And so I'm really rooting for him. He's got to have another big spring, because if he doesn't, this year there's two guys who could take his job. It's Adam Frazier and Nick Lofton. Either one of them can. So it's a big spring for him, and I was glad to see he got the big hit. I obviously can't see the game. I'm not there.
Sure.
It's not televised anywhere.
Yep.
I have a hunch that it was an Arizona triple, because it sounded like the ball just scooted on the outfield grass, which those are hard fields, just because of how dry it is out there. Even so, he hit the ball hard enough that it did get through the outfielder. So I don't especially care that it was a triple. I care that he hit the ball hard, and I care that he hit the ball hard against a lefty. That was a nice moment. Just got to keep doing it the rest of the spring.
So right now, Michael Garcia is the third baseman. He had a ridiculous winter league, right? Was that what it was, the winter league?
Yeah.
Where his,
yeah.
I mean, that was just, it was silly. It was road to the show numbers. Even that and road to the show, I ain't getting there. But there's no other really third baseman knocking on the door. Is he just going to be more of a untraditional third baseman and you get by because he has great defense, with Bobby Witt Jr. having more of a third baseman's bat, but also at shortstop? Is that how you see the left side of the infield shaking down? What do you make away from Michael Garcia?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's the third baseman. He's not without competition. They didn't bring anybody in for him, but Nick Lofton could also play third. And I don't anticipate him losing the job, but it's possible. He's not Bobby Witt Jr. where he's entrenched at his position. Defensively, he's great. We saw it last year.
Yeah.
He's a shortstop playing third, exactly as you'd expect a shortstop playing third. And the bat has its positives. He makes contact. He makes really loud contact, actually. He has a pretty good understanding of the strike zone, doesn't strike out a ton. The issue is, I wrote about this earlier in the offseason, the issue is the trajectory, and there's just not enough power in the bat. Ended up with an 84 weighted runs created plus, which part of that was a bad September. But part of it just doesn't get enough oomph onto the ball. He hits it hard, but he hits it hard into the ground. And that's kind of one of the pitfalls. You can say, oh, average exit velocity is great, hard hit rate is great. Yeah, but when you're hitting ground balls, it doesn't really matter that much. So unless you're Luis Arraez, and even he's hitting the ball in the air some. But that's why I'm also a little bit skeptical of his winter ball, because he still only had like a 150 ISO down there, even though he hit 420. But his slugging percentage was still under 600, which I know it's weird to say still under 600 is a negative, but given the average, I mean, it was a lot of singles. It wasn't a ton of extra base power.
Sure.
And I mean, I go back to, when what was that, like 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, I heard a rumor the Royals were talking about Matt Chapman or about a third baseman.
Gosh, I love Matt Chapman. I know you and I think differ here, but I absolutely love Matt Chapman. I love when he was with Oakland. I know he hasn't had the best seasons since. I love his arm. Watching him play defense is just glorious to watch. I've always been a big Matt Chapman guy.
Well, so I don't think we disagree entirely. I just don't think it's worth what he would cost the Royals.
Sure.
But because it's not just the money. They lose a draft pick, too, because you got a qualifying offer. They'd lose, like, $2.1 million or something in draft slot money. Like, that's not insignificant. Plus, you know, it's not just that they'd lose that money. It's that it's a lot of money on the contract, too, in all likelihood. So, because if you're giving up a draft pick and you give a guy, you could say, oh, we'll sign him to a one-year pillow contract. I would not want to give up a draft pick and that draft slot money for a guy who you only signed for 1 year. That just doesn't make sense to me. So
could you sign him longer than 1 year, or are you thinking Matt Chapman's not interested in something?
Well,
like
I don't know. I don't know. And I think when I heard about it, I guarantee you they weren't thinking of a short term deal. It was a 4 or 5 year deal, and it was, I don't know, $85 to $100 million, probably $110 million, something like that. And so I don't know if that's still on the table or not. I haven't heard anything either way about that. But there's, like, no Matt Chapman rumors. So at some point, somebody's going to go, all right, I'll sign a really good defender who's got power. like, why not? Because as a player, I think Matt Chapman is a nice fit. Just the cost is where I get a little bit hung up. So I think short of that, Garcia's playing third, because who else is there? Unless Nick Lofton has a chance. He could have a massive spring and you know, that could be where where him losing his job comes into play, but it's hard to see.
Is there a chance that Nick Lofton is on the opening day roster, and not for Mikel Garcia, but as this super sub for Garrett Hampson? Or is Garrett Hampson firmly entrenched at this point? Because I'm looking at it, and it feels like Hampson and Lofton could potentially be a little bit interchangeable, right? Maybe I'm wrong here. Obviously, Hampson has more Major League Baseball experience. He's coming off a pretty nice year overall last year. Can play everywhere defensively. Is there any chance that if, just for example, Nick Lofton shows out, they still believe in Mikel Garcia, they still believe in Michael Massey, that it could be actually Garrett Hampson? It was not a large contract. Is that in the cards, or is that pretty unrealistic?
I would bet against it for a couple of reasons. One, Hampson doesn't have any options.
Okay.
And you're probably not signing somebody to a big league deal, no matter who it is and for how much, and then moving on that fast.
Sure.
I just don't see it. I think that's... If Hampson had an option, I could see maybe Nick Lofton could win the job over him. I don't think it'll happen. I think that you're more likely to see... I think the only way Nick Lofton makes the big league roster is if Michael Massey does not. I don't see both of them on the roster because I just don't... I don't see a way that it works. Because Adam Frazier's making the team, and I'm 99.9% sure Garrett Hampson is making the team. And when you start to look at the roster math, unless they are looking at Garrett Hampson as the fifth outfielder and don't carry another center fielder, which is kind of risky given that the defense in the corners is MJ Melendez, Hunter Renfro, and Nelson Velasquez.
Some cannons, though, baby. It's the Jose Guillen method. It's who cares?
They can throw, for sure. But, I think that you're much more likely to see Drew Waters or Dyron Blanco as an extra outfielder, with Hampson as kind of the third center fielder, than Hampson as the second center fielder. But maybe they are looking at Hampson as more of an outfielder than an infielder. And then I think there is a spot for Nick Lofton. So it's possible, but I think more likely it's Massey or Lofton to start. And then it's a long season. I always say this every year, and I know you and I have talked about this. We focus so much on this opening day roster, and it's, who's going to make the cut? Who's going to be there? I write projections like once a week during spring training about this. And in the end, March 28th, 2024 is the same one-day snapshot of a roster as August 16th, 2024 and May 29th, 2024. Like the roster, it is so flexible throughout the season that the opening day roster is just a snapshot in time. And if somebody doesn't make it on that roster, that's not to say he won't be on that May 29th roster, the August 16th or whatever date I said.
Yeah.
Like there are opportunities. So we put a lot of stock into opening day, but it's a long season.
Yeah. Well, Lesky, I apologize. I get so excited. All I want is baseball. Baseball.
Too.
But baseball I can watch on TV. How about that? Baseball that matters, I can watch on TV. I am beyond excited. We're going to go to a game this year, maybe a few. Before I let you go, the QT patch. So the Royals were one of the few teams who did not have an advertiser last year. This year they brought it up. I love Quick Trip, but man, that color scheme sure looks bright on the...
yeah.
Especially on the powder blues.
I know. Look, we stand for Quick Trip, right? Like, let's call it like it is.
Yeah, those cheesy Pepper Jack taquitos are on another level.
Sterling, any taquito. It's not... You don't have to pick one out. I only have one kid, right? But if I had multiples, I wouldn't pick a favorite. And that's the same with taquitos here. So all of the egg rolls are good. The buffalo chicken rollers are delicious. The hot dogs are delicious. The breakfast sandwiches are delicious. I love a Quick Trip coffee. Don't love them on my Royals uniform. but the Royals, it's funny because this is one of those situations where you're like, I don't like it, but they're donating the money to charity.
Yeah, for a great cause.
It's for a wonderful cause. I don't know. The uglier the patch on the uniform, the more money goes to charity, maybe. I guess if that's, if that's the case. I don't want to look at it, but I appreciate what they're doing with it. So it's kind of I'll look the other way, I guess.
End of the day, too. You know what? Maybe Quick Trip needs some more love when they go and face those East Coasters and their Wawa and their Publix. Quick Trip needs to show that they reign supreme, okay?
You know what? Quick Trip against all of them is like Chiefs against 49ers. Everybody thinks the others are going to win, but it's going to be Chiefs in the end. It's going to be Quick Trip in the end.
David Lesky, make sure you check out his work insidethecrown.substack.com. I mean, he is putting out phenomenal articles day after day. Wake up in the morning with an email of Royals knowledge directly right there. Do it while you're drinking your Quick Trip coffee. And make sure you follow him on Twitter at DB Lesky. Lesky, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sterling.
Take a break. Come back. Home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to the home stretch, ESPN Kansas City. Always a fun time when Lesky comes on. I don't know why I thought Sin Leon. I was meaning Austin Nola. Because originally I saw Nola signs to a major league deal, and I go, wait, Aaron Nola? That can't be right. And it was Austin. I remember the Padres, good defender. Also played some second base at one point, I remember.
Yeah,
for a catcher. But yeah, glad that he shored that up, that it's more or less just meaning that he's on the 40-man, not necessarily he's going to be on the big league roster. They just wanted some depth. It makes a lot more sense now. That's why you talk to Lesky, right? Get the in-depth knowledge from him. Couple of things to touch on, again, in regards to the current salary cap rising by over $30 million up to $255 million. This is according to Over the Cap posted by U Stadium on the X. Chiefs now have $27.7 million in open money, which right about the middle, a little less than middle, it looks like. So I'm trying to do some math really quickly. Let's bear with me. Bills, $41 million over the cap already. Even with the news, Bills are $41 million over the cap. Again, the Von Miller stuff. They'll have some ways around this. No Gabe Davis. They'll figure some stuff out. But Bills and Saints are both over $40 million over the cap already. Dolphins, $38.5 million.
I'm waiting for the Chargers.
Chargers 22 over the cap still. Broncos 10.7 over the cap. Look at the AFC West. Cowboys 8.1, Browns 6.2. Now we get to teams that are under the cap. Niners just under 834, Steelers 7.4, Packers 8.1, Seahawks 13, Jets 15, Ravens 18.5, Jags 24.7, then the Chiefs 27.7, Eagles 32, Giants 32.8, Vikings, Falcons, Panthers, Bucks, Rams, Raiders. Raiders got 48.6 million. And then the Commanders have the most with 87, Patriots second most with 83, Bears third with 80. Bengals surprisingly fifth most right now at 72.8. So if you thought the Bengals might have an opportunity to bring some dudes back, you might be right. Obviously, Joe Burrow's contract, Jamar Chase's contract, T. Higgins' contract. Well, a lot of dudes there.
Yeah.
That 72 won't stay 72 for very long. This is the Home Stretch here, ESPN at Kansas City. We'll be back live in studio on Monday. Until then, we are out.